Chapter 10. Roused from her sleep, Freya Gaines groped for the switch on the vidphone. Groggily, she found it and snapped it on. "Hello?" she mumbled, wondering what time it was. She made out the luminous dial of the clock beside the bed. 3 a.m. Good grief. Carol Holt Garden's features formed on the vidscreen.
"Freya, have you seen Pete?"
Carol's voice was jerky, anxiety-stricken.
"He went out, and he still hasn't come back. I can't go to sleep."
"No," Freya said. "Of course I don't know where he is. Did the police let him go?"
"He's out on bail," Carol said. "Do you have any idea what places he might stop at? The bars are all closed now. I was waiting for 2 o'clock, thinking he'd show up no later than 2:30, but..."
"Try the Blind Lemon in Berkeley," Freya said, and started to cut the connection. Maybe he's dead, she thought. Threw himself off one of the bridges or crashed his car. Finally.
Carol said, "He's celebrating."
"Oh, good God, why?" Freya said.
"I'm pregnant."
Fully awake, Freya said,
"I see."
"Astonishing. Right away. You must be using that new rapid paper they're selling."
"Yes," Carol said. "I bid a piece tonight and it turned green. That's why Pete's out. I wish he'd come back. He's so emotional. First he's depressed and suicidal, and then..."
"You worry about your problems, I'll worry about mine," Freya cut in. "Congratulations, Carol. I hope it's a baby." And then she did break the connection. The image faded into darkness. "The bastard," Freya said to herself with fury and bitterness. She lay back supine, staring up at the ceiling, clenching her fists and fighting back the tears. "I could kill him," she said to herself. "I hope he's dead. I hope he never comes back to her." "Would he come here?" She sat up, stricken. "What if he does?" she asked herself. Beside her, in the bed, Clem Gaines snored on. "If he shows up here, I won't let him in," she decided. "I don't want to see him." But for some reason, she knew Pete would not come here anyhow. "He's not looking for me," she realized. "I'm the last person he's looking for." She lit a cigarette and sat in bed, smoking and staring straight ahead of her, silently. The Vug said, "Mr. Garden, when did you first begin to notice these disembodied feelings, as if the world about you is not quite real?"
"As long ago as I can remember," Pete said.
"And your reaction?"
"Depression. I've taken thousands of amitriptyline tablets, and they only have a temporary effect."
"Do you know who I am?" the Vug asked.
"Let's see," Pete said, cogitating.
The name Dr. Phelps floated through his mind.
"Dr. Eugene Phelps," he said hopefully.
"Almost right, Mr. Garden. It's Dr. E.R. Phillipson. And how did you happen to look me up? Do you perhaps recall that?"
Pete said, "How could I help looking you up?" The answer was obvious. "Because you're there, or rather here."
"Stick out your tongue."
"Why?"
"As a mark of disrespect." Pete stuck out his tongue.
"Ah," he said.
"Additional comment is unnecessary. The point's made. How many times have you attempted suicide?"
4, Pete said. "The first when I was 20, the second when I was 40, the third, no need to go on. How close did you come to success?"
"Very close, yes, sir.
Especially the last time."
"What stopped you?"
"A force greater than myself," Pete said.
"How droll." The Vug chuckled.
"I mean my wife. Betty, that was her name. Betty Jo. She and I met at Joe Schilling's rare record shop. Betty Jo had breasts as firm and ripe as melons. Or was her name Marianne?"
"Her name was not Marianne,"
Dr. E.R. Phillipson said, because now you're speaking of the 18-year-old daughter of Pat and Alan McLean, and she has never been your wife. I am not qualified to describe her breasts or her mother's. In any case, you scarcely know her. All you know about her, in fact, is that she devoutly listens to Nat's cats, whom you can't stand. You and she have nothing in common.
You lying son of a bitch, Pete said.
Oh no, I'm not lying. I'm facing reality, and that's exactly what you've failed to do. That's why you're here. You're involved in an intricate, sustained illusion system of massive proportion. You and half of your game-playing friends. Do you want to escape from it?
No, Pete said. I mean, yes. Yes or no, what does it matter? He felt sick at his stomach. Can I leave now? He said. I think I've spent all my money.
The Vogue doctor, E.R. Phillipson, said, you have $25 in time left.
Well, I'd rather have the $25.
That raises a nice point of professional ethics in that you have already paid me.
Then pay me back, Pete said.
The Vogue sighed. This is a stalemate. I think I will make the decision for both of us. Do I have $25 worth of help left that I can give you? It depends on what you want. You are in a situation of insidiously growing difficulty. It will probably kill you shortly, just as it killed Mr. Luckman. Be especially careful for your pregnant wife. She is excruciatingly fragile at this point.
I will.
Dr. E.R. Phillipson said, your best bet, Garden, is to bend with the forces of the times. There's little hope that you can achieve much, really. You're one person, and you do, in some respects, properly see the situation. But physically, you're powerless. Who can you go to? E.B. Black? Mr. Hawthorne? You could try. They might help you. They might not. Now, as to the time segment missing from your memory.
Yes, Pete said. The time segment missing from my memory. How about that?
You have fairly well reconstructed it by means of the Rushmore effect mechanisms, so don't fret unduly.
But did I kill Luckman?
Ha ha ha, the Vogue said. Do you think I'm going to tell you? Are you out of your mind?
Maybe so, Pete said. Maybe I'm being naive. He felt even sicker now, too sick to go on any further. Where's the men's room? He asked the Vogue. Or shall I say the human's room?
He looked around, squinting to see. The colors were all wrong, and when he tried to walk, he felt weightless, or at least much lighter. Too light. He was not on Earth. This was not 1G pulling at him. It was only a fraction. He thought, I'm on Titan. Second door to the left, the Vogue Dr. E.R. Phillipson said.
Thank you, Pete said,
walking with care so that he would not float up and rebound from one of the white-painted walls.
Listen, he said, pausing. What about Carol?
This was not 1G pulling at him. It was only a fraction. He thought, I'm on Titan. Second door to the left, the Vogue Dr. E.R. Phillipson said.
Thank you,
Pete said, walking with care so that he would not float up and rebound from one of the white-painted walls.
Listen, he said, pausing. What about Carol? I'm giving up, Patricia. Nothing means anything to me except the mother of my child.
Nothing means anything, you mean, Dr. E.R. Phillipson said. A joke and a poor one. I'm merely commenting on your state of mind. Things are seldom what they seem. Skim milk masquerades as cream. A wonderful statement by the Terran humorist W.S. Gilbert. I wish you luck, and I suggest you consult Evie Black. He's reliable. You can trust him. I'm not so sure about Hawthorne."
The Vug called loudly after Pete,
"And close the bathroom door after you, so I won't have to listen. It's disgusting when a Terran is sick."
Pete shut the door. "How do I get out of here?" he asked himself. "I've got to escape. How'd I get here to Titan in the first place? How much time has passed? Days? Weeks, perhaps? I have to get home to Carol. God," he thought. "They may have killed her by now, the way they killed Luckman." They? Who? He did not know. It had been explained to him, or had it? Had he really gotten $150 worth? Perhaps. It was his responsibility, not theirs, to retain the knowledge. A window high up in the bathroom. He moved the great metal paper towel drum over, stood on it, and managed to reach the window. Stuck shut, painted shut. He smashed upward against its wooden frame with the heels of his hands. Creaking, the window rose. Room enough. He hoisted himself up, squeezed through. Darkness, the titanian night. He dropped, fell, listening to himself whistle down and down like a feather, or rather like a bug with large surface area in proportion to mass. He shouted, but he heard no sound except the whistle of his falling. He struck, pitched forward, lay suffering the pain in his feet and legs. "Broke my goddamn ankle," he said to himself. He hobbled up to his feet. An alley, trash cans and cobblestones. He hobbled toward a streetlight. To his right, a red neon sign, Dave's Place, a bar. He had come out the back, out of the men's washroom, minus his coat. He leaned against the wall of a building, waiting for the numbing pain in his ankles to subside. A Rushmore circuit cruising past, automatic policeman. "Are you all right, sir?" "Yes," Pete said. "Thank you, just stopped and, you know what, nature called." He laughed. "Thanks." The Rushmore cop wheeled on. "What city am I in?" he asked himself. The air, damp, smelled of ashes. Chicago? St. Louis? Warm, foul air, not the clean air of San Francisco. He walked unsteadily down the street, away from Dave's Place. The Vug inside, cadging drinks, clipping Terran customers, rolling them in an educated way. He felt for his wallet in his pants pocket. Gone, Jesus Christ. He felt at his coat. There it was. He sighed in relief. "Those pills I took," he thought, "didn't mix with the drinks, or rather did mix, that's the problem. But I'm okay, not hurt. Just a little shaken up and scared. And I'm lost. I've lost myself in my car. And separately." "Car," he called, trying to summon its auto-auto-mech system. Its Rushmore effect. Sometimes it responded, sometimes not. Chance factor. Lights, twin beams. His car rolled along the curb, bumped to a halt by him. "Mr. Garden, here I am."
"Listen," Pete said, fumbling, finding the door handle. "Where are we, for Christ's sakes?"
"Pocatello, Idaho."
"For Christ's sakes."
"It's God's truth, Mr. Garden, I swear it."
Pete said,
"You're awfully articulate for a Rushmore circuit, aren't you?"
Opening the car door, he peered in, blinking in the glare of the dome light. Peered suspiciously and in fright. Someone sat behind the tiller. After a pause, the figure said,
"Get in, Mr. Garden."
"Why?" he said.
"So I can drive you where you want to go."
"I don't want to go anywhere," he said. "I want to stay here."
"Why are you looking at me so funny? Don't you remember coming and getting me?" It was your idea to do the town. Do several towns, as a matter of fact. She smiled. It was a woman, he saw that now. Who the hell are you? He said. I don't know you. Why, you certainly do. You met me at Joseph Schilling's rare record shop in New Mexico.
Marianne McLean, he said then.
He got slowly into the car beside her.
What's been going on?
Marianne said calmly. You've been celebrating your wife Carol's pregnancy.
But how'd I get mixed up with you?
First, you dropped by the apartment in Marin County. I wasn't there because I was at the San Francisco Public Library doing research. My mother told you, and you flew to San Francisco to the library and picked me up. And we drove to Pocatello because you had the idea that an 18-year-old girl would be served in a bar in Idaho, and she isn't in San Francisco, as we found out.
Was I right?
No. So you went in alone to Dave's place, and I've been sitting out here in the car waiting for you, and you just now came out of that alley and began yelling.
I see, he said.
He lay back against the seat.
I feel sick. I wish I was home.
Marianne McLean said, I'll drive you home, Mr. Garden. The car now had lifted into the sky. Pete shut his eyes.
How'd I get mixed up with that vug? He said after a time.
What vug?
In the bar, I guess. Dr. Something Phillipson.
How would I know? They wouldn't let me in.
Well, was there a vug in there? Didn't you see in?
I saw in. I went in at first. But there was no vug while I was there. But of course I came right back out. They made me leave.
I'm quite a heel, Pete said, staying inside drinking while you sat out here in the car.
I didn't mind, Marianne said. I had a nice conversation with the Rushmore unit. I learned a lot about you, didn't I, Carr?
Yes, Miss McLean, the car said.
It likes me, Marianne said. All Rushmore effects like me, she laughed. I charm them.
Evidently, Pete said. What time is it?
About 4.
A.M.?
He couldn't believe it.
How come the bar was still open? They don't allow bars open that late in any state.
Maybe I looked at the clock wrong, Marianne said.
No, Pete said. You looked at it right, but something's wrong. Something's terribly wrong.
Ha ha, Marianne said.
He glanced at her. At the tiller of the car sat the shapeless slime of a vug.
Car, Pete said instantly. What's at the tiller? Tell me. Marianne McLean, Mr. Garden, the car said.
But the vug still sat there. He saw it.
Are you sure? Pete said.
Positive, the car said. The vug said, As I said, I can charm Rushmore circuits.
Where are we going? Pete said.
Home, to take you back to your wife, Carol.
And then what?
And then I'm going home to bed.
What are you?
He said to it. What do you think? You can see. Tell someone about it. Tell Mr. Hawthorne, the detective, or better yet, tell E.B. Black, the detective. E.B. Black would get a kick out of it.
Pete shut his eyes. When he opened them again, it was Marianne McLean sitting there beside him at the tiller of the car.
You were right, he said to the car. Where were you? He wondered. God, he thought, I wish I was home. I wish I hadn't come out tonight. I'm scared. Joe Schilling, he could help me.
Aloud, he said, Take me to Joe Schilling's apartment, Marianne, or whatever your name is.
At this time of night? You're crazy.
He's my best friend in all the world.
It'll be 5 a.m. when we get there.
He'll be glad to see me, Pete said, with what I have to tell him.
And what's that? Marianne said.
Cautiously, he said.
You know, about Carol, the baby.
Oh, yes, Marianne said. She nodded. As Freya said, I hope it's a baby.
Freya said that? Who to?
To Carol.
How do you know?
Marianne said, you telephoned Carol from the car before we went to Dave's place. You wanted to be sure she was all right. She was very upset. And you asked why, and she said that she had called Freya looking for you, and Freya had said that.
Damn that Freya, Pete said.
I don't blame you for feeling like that. She's a hard, schizoid type, it sounds like. We studied about that in psych.
Do you like school?
Love it, Marianne said.
Do you think you could be interested in an old man of 150 years?
You're not so old, Mr. Garden. Just confused. You'll feel better after I get you home.
She smiled at him briefly. I'm still potent, he said. As witness Carol's impregnation. Hooey! He cried.
3 cheers, Marianne said. Just think, one more Terran in the world. Isn't that delightful?
We don't generally refer to ourselves as Terrans, Pete said. We generally say people. You made a mistake.
Oh, Marianne said, nodding. Mistake noted.
Pete said, is your mother part of this? Is that why she didn't want the police to scan her?
Yep, Marianne said.
How many are in it?
Oh, thousands, Marianne, or rather the Vug, said.
Despite what he saw, he knew it to be a Vug.
Just thousands and thousands all over the planet.
But not everyone's in on it, Pete said, because you still have to hide from the authorities. I think I will tell Hawthorne.
Marianne laughed.
Reaching into the glove compartment, Pete fumbled about.
Marianne removed the gun, the car informed him. She was afraid if the police stopped you and they found it, they'd put you back in jail. That's right, Marianne said.
You people killed Luckman. Why?
She shrugged. I forget. Sorry.
Who's next?
The thing.
What thing?
Marianne, her eyes sparkling, said, the thing growing inside Carol. Bad luck, Mr. Garden. It's not a baby.
He shut his eyes. The next he knew, they were over the Bay Area.
Almost home, Marianne said.
And you're just going to let me off, he said.
Why not?
I don't know.
He was sick then, in the corner of the car, like an animal would be. Marianne said nothing after that, and he said nothing either.
What a terrible night this had been, he thought to himself. It should have been wonderful. My first luck. And instead... And now he could not reasonably dwell on the theme of suicide because the situation had become worse. Was too bad for that to be a solution. My own problems are problems of perception, he realized, of understanding and then accepting. What I have to remember is that they're not all in it. The detective E.B. Black isn't in it, and Dr. Phillipson, he or it, isn't in it either. I can get help from something, somewhere, sometime.
Right you are, Marianne said.
Are you a telepath? He said to her.
I very much certainly darn right am.
But, he said, your mother said you weren't.
My mother lied to you.
Pete said, is Nat's Katz the center of all this?
Yes, she said.
I thought so, he said, and lay back against the seat, trying not to be sick again.
Marianne said, here we are.
The car dipped down, skimmed above the deserted pavement of San Rafael Street.
Give me a kiss, she said, before you get out.
She brought the car to a halt at the curb, and looking up, he saw his apartment building. The light was on in his window. Carol was still up, waiting for him, or else she had fallen asleep with the lights on. A kiss, he echoed. Really?
Yes. Really,
Marianne said, and leaned expectantly toward him. I can't, he said.
Why not?
Because, he said, of what you are,
the thing that you are.
Oh, how absurd, Marianne said. What's the matter with you, Pete? You're lost in dreams.
I am?
Yes, she said, glaring at him in exasperation. You took dope tonight and got drunk, and you were terribly excited about Carol, and also you were afraid because of the police. You've been hallucinating like mad for the last 2 hours. You thought that psychiatrist, Dr. Phillipson, was a vug, and then you thought I was a vug. To the car, Marianne said, Am I a vug? No, Marianne, the Rushmore circuit of the car answered for the second time. See? She said.
I still can't do it, he said. Just let me out of the car.
He found the door handle, opened the door, stepped out on the curb, his legs shaking under him.
Good night, Marianne said, eyeing him.
Good night.
He started toward the door of the apartment building. The car said after him, You got me all dirty.
Too bad, Pete said.
He opened the apartment building door with his key and passed on inside. The door shut after him. When he got upstairs, he found Carol standing in the hall in a short, sheer yellow nightgown.
I heard the car drive up, she said. Thank God you're back. I was so worried about you.
She folded her arms, self-consciously blushing.
I should be in my robe, I know.
Thanks for waiting up.
He passed on by her, went into the bathroom and washed his face and hands with cold water.
Can I fix you something to eat or drink? It's so late now.
A coffee, he said, would be fine.
In the kitchen, she fixed a pot of coffee for both of them.
Do me a favor, Pete said. Call Pocatello Information, the Vidphone Autocorp, and find out if there's a Dr. E.R. Phillipson listed.
All right.
Carol clicked on the vidphone. She talked for a time with a sequence of homeostatic circuits, and then she rang off.
Yes.
I was seeing him, Pete said. It cost me $150. Their rates are high. Could you tell from what the vidphone said if Phillipson is a Terran?
They didn't say. I got his number.
She pushed the pad toward him.
I'll call him and ask.
He clicked the vidphone back on.
At 5:30 in the morning?
Yes, he said, dialing.
A long time passed. The phone at the other end rang and rang.
Walking the dog, Seaball, Seaball, Pete sang. He have 'em red whisker, he have 'em green paw.
Doctors expect this, he said to Carol. There was a sharp click, then on the vid screen a face, a wrinkled human face, formed.
Dr. Phillipson? Pete asked. Yes.
The doctor shook his head blearily, then scrutinized Pete.
Oh, it's you.
You remember me? Pete said.
Of course I do. You're the man Joe Schilling sent to me. I saw you for an hour earlier tonight.
Joe Schilling, Pete said to himself. I didn't know that.
You're not a vug, are you? Pete said to Dr. Phillipson. Is that what you called me up to ask?
Yes, Pete said. It's very important.
I am not a vug, Dr. Phillipson said,
and hung up. Pete shut off the vidphone.
I think I'll go to bed, he said to Carol. I'm worn out. Are you okay?
Yes, she said. A little tired.
Let's go to bed together, he said to her.
Carol smiled.
All right. I'm certainly glad to have you back. Do you always do things like this, go out on binges until 5:30 a.m.?
No, he said.
And I'll never do it again, he thought. As he sat on the edge of the bed removing his clothes, he found something, a match folder stuffed into his left shoe beneath his instep. He set the shoe down, held the match folder under the lamp by the bed, and examined it. Carol, beside him, had already gotten into bed and apparently had gone directly to sleep. On the match folder, in his own hand, penciled words, "We are entirely surrounded by bugs, rugs, vugs." That was my discovery tonight, he remembered. My bright, crowning achievement, and I was afraid I'd somehow forget it. I wonder when I wrote that, in the bar? On the way home? Probably when I first figured it out, when I was talking to Dr. Phillipson. Carol, he said, I know who killed Luckman.
Who?
She said, still awake.
We all did, Pete said. All six of us who've lost our memories. Janice Remington, Sylvanus Angst and his wife, Clem Gaines, Bill Calamine's wife, and myself. We did it acting under the influence of the Vugs.
He held out the match folder to her. Read what I wrote here, in case I didn't remember, in case they tampered with my mind again. Sitting up, she took the match folder and studied it.
We are entirely surrounded by Vugs.
Excuse me, but I have to laugh.
He glared at her grimly.
That's why you placed that call to the doctor in Idaho and asked him what you did? Now I understand, but he isn't a Vug. You saw him yourself on the screen and heard him.
Yeah, that's so, he admitted.
Who else is a Vug? Or as you started to write it?
Marianne McLean. She's the worst of them all.
Oh, Carol said, nodding. I see, Pete. That's who you were with tonight. I wondered. I knew it was someone, some woman.
Pete clicked on the vidphone by the bed. I'm going to call Hawthorne and Black, those two cops. They're not in on it. As he dialed, he said to Carol, No wonder Pat McLean didn't want to be scanned by the police.
Pete, don't do it tonight.
She reached out and cut the circuit off.
But they may get me tonight, any time.
Tomorrow, Carol smiled at him coaxingly. Please.
Can I call Joe Schilling then?
If you want. I just don't think you should talk to the police right now the way you're feeling. You're in so much trouble with them already.
He dialed information, got Joe Schilling's new number in Marin County. Presently, Schilling's hairy, ruddy face formed on the screen, fully alert.
Yes, what is it? Pete, listen, Carol called and told me the good news about your luck. My God, that's terrific.
Pete said, Did you send me to a Dr. Phillipson in Pocatello?
Who?
Pete repeated the name. Joe Schilling's face screwed up in bafflement.
Okay, Pete said. Sorry I woke you. I didn't think you did. Wait a minute, Schilling said. Listen, about 2 years ago, when you were at my shop in New Mexico, we had a conversation. What was it about? It was something about the side effects of methamphetamine hydrochloride. You were taking them then, and I warned you against them. There was an article in Scientific American by a psychiatrist in Idaho. I think it was this Phillipson you mentioned, and he said that methamphetamines can precipitate a psychotic episode.
I have a dim memory, Pete said.
Your theory, your answer to the article, was that you were also taking a trifluoperazine, a dihydrochloride of some sort, which you swore compensated for the side effects of the methamphetamines.
Pete said, I took a whole bunch of methamphetamine tablets tonight, 7.5 milligram ones, too.
And you also drank?
Yes.
Eichewald. You remember what Phillipson said in his article about a mixture of methamphetamines and alcohol?
Vaguely.
They potentiate each other. Did you have a psychotic episode tonight?
Well, not by a long shot. I had a moment of absolute truth. Here, I'll read it to you.
To Carol, Pete said,
Hand me back that match folder.
She passed it to him, and he read from it.
That was my revelation, Joe, my experience. There are Vugs all around us.
Schilling was silent a moment, and then he said,
About this Dr. Phillipson in Idaho. Did you go to him? Is that why you ask? I paid $150 to him tonight, Pete said. And in my opinion, I got my money's worth.
After a pause, Schilling said,
I'm going to suggest something to you that'll surprise you. Call that detective, Hawthorne.
That's what I wanted to do, Pete said,
but Carol won't let me. I want to talk to Carol, Joe Schilling said.
Rising to a sitting position in the bed, Carol faced the vidscreen.
I'm right here, Joe. If you think Pete should call Hawthorne...
Carol, I've known your husband for years. He has suicidal depressions regularly. To be blunt, dear, he's a manic depressive. He has an affective psychosis periodically. Tonight, because of the news about the baby, he's gone into a manic phase, and I, for one, don't blame him. I know how it feels. It's like being reborn. I want him to call Hawthorne for a very good reason. Hawthorne has had more to do with Vugs than anyone else we know. There's no use my talking to Pete. I don't know a darn thing about Vugs. Maybe they're all around us for all I know. I'm not going to try to argue Pete out of it, especially at 5:30 in the morning. I suggest you follow the same course.
All right, Carol said.
Pete, Joe Schilling said, remember this when you talk to Hawthorne. Anything you say may turn up later on in the prosecutor's case against you. Hawthorne is not a friend, pure and simple. So go cautiously, right?
Yes, Pete agreed.
But tell me what you think. Was it the mixture of methamphetamines and alcohol?
Joe Schilling said, sidestepping the question.
Tell me something. What did Dr. Phillipson say?
He said a lot of things. He said, for one, that he thought this situation was going to kill me as it had Luckman, and for me to take special care of Carol. And he said...
He paused.
There's little I can do to change matters.
Did he seem friendly?
Yes, Pete said, even though he's a Vug. He broke the connection then, waited a moment, and then dialed the police emergency number. One of the friendly ones, he said to himself.
One who's on our side, maybe.
It took the police switchboard 20 minutes to locate Hawthorne. During that time, Pete drank coffee and felt more and more sober.
Hawthorne, he said at last, when the image formed. Sorry to bother you so late at night. I can tell you who killed Luckman.
Hawthorne said,
Mr. Garden, we know who killed Luckman. We've got a confession. That's where I've been, at Carmel headquarters.
He looked drawn and weary. Who? Pete demanded. Which one of the group?
It was nobody in Pretty Blue Fox. We moved our investigations back to the East Coast, where Luckman started out. The confession is by a top employee of Luckman's, a man named Sid Mosk. As yet, we haven't been able to establish the motive. We're working on that.
Pete clicked off the vidphone and sat in silence.
What now? He asked himself. What do I do?
Come to bed, Carol said, lying back down and covering herself up with the blankets. Shutting off the lamp, Pete Garden went to bed. It was a mistake.